didn't hear the sample, right?
No.
Arsenal of Freedom.
Oh, man, I'm sorry I missed it. Folks, welcome back to Anti-War Radio. I am your host, Scott Horton. This is Radio Chaos, 95.9 FM, 92.7 FM in Austin, Texas. Streaming live worldwide on the internet, KAOS959.com. And, well, as you can tell, I'm wide awake and fully caffeinated because I've been up since 6:30 this morning. And I'm on, I forget if it's my fourth or fifth cup of coffee, but... check it out. The show is now live. What you just heard was, well, the lower class brats, and a wonderful soundbite about the Arsenal of Freedom prepared for you by Miss Shauna Kay. But before that was an interview from just a couple of weeks ago that I did with Brendan O'Neill from Spiked Online, a great libertarian website, I think, out of the United Kingdom. And the discussion there was all about how the Democrats did so much to help and strengthen the internationalist jihadist movement in the 1990s by importing Afghan fighters, bin Laden types, to fight in the jihad in Bosnia. And the severe consequences of those decisions that we're suffering from right now. If you missed the whole thing, you can find the archive at Anti-War Radio at the top of the page of antiwar.com. And, I don't have any guests for this part of the show or, well, for the rest of this show today. And that's because I already did 6 interviews today. My thanks to Jack Blood for letting me borrow his studio this morning. unfortunately, the electronic communications gear, machine, jammer thing that they got there didn't work. And I ended up just sitting on the telephone and hosting the Charles Goyette Show for 3 hours this morning in Phoenix, Arizona on 1100 AM KFNX in Phoenix. And I just did the whole thing on the phone. Turns out it would have been better if I just stayed here. I could have at least, you know, talked into my microphone over the phone patch. Probably would have sounded a little bit better than that telephone mic for the same quality. Going over the telephone line at least would have been a better signal going in. But I don't know how well it sounded or how bad it sounded because I haven't heard the archive yet. But the archive will be posted later at my blog, thestressblog.com, and at Anti-War Radio. And I'm really thankful, one, to Jack for letting me use his studio. But beyond that, I'm extremely thankful to Charles Goyette for the opportunity to fill in on his show today while he's off on vacation. I hope that that crack he made about, putting a new coat of some kind of petroleum product on his garage floor was just that, a joke, and that he's relaxing in the sun somewhere right now. In any case, I really appreciate Charles giving me the opportunity to fill in for him on the show today. And, of course, his engineers, Dave Lucas is his producer, and his engineer, Chet Reynolds, both did a real good job, too, with what we had to work with, technical problems notwithstanding. Big thanks to both of them, too, for running the show this morning. And that's right, I did interview 6 guests this morning on the Charles Goyette Show. I put together, for those of you who are regulars to this show, you're familiar with all these people to one degree or another. Archives of previous interviews of all of them are available, of course, at Anti-War Radio and at ScottHortonShow.com. But I spoke with Gordon Prather, the nuclear physicist, Juan Cole, the professor of history, Philip Giraldi, former CIA officer, writes for the American Conservative. And I talked with Robert Dreyfus and with Gareth Porter and with Justin Raimondo. And the point of bringing all those wonderful guests onto one radio show, and it wasn't all at the same time talking over each other, which would have been impossible. One at a time, I brought them on to really grab the bull by the horns and attempt to refute each and every bit of propaganda that the war party in this country continues to invoke against the nation state of Iran. And it's not because I relish being the defender of Iran. In fact, if our government was leaving them alone and there was no threat that our government was, you know, trying to come up with an excuse to bomb them, I would like to join in with the critics of the Iranian regime. Hey, quit being such theocratic jerks all the time, guys. Problem is, that's only my interest as an individual and as a human being, not as an American. It's none of America's business, the internal affairs of the nation-state of Iran. And as proven by my wide and varied expert guests on Charles Goyette's radio show this morning, all of the excuses for bombing Iran put forward by the American War Party are lies. Lies. It's no different than the lead-up to the Iraq War. And I try to imagine sometimes, well, who are the people who are buying this? What are they telling themselves? Well, they lied to us about the war in Iraq and said that there was an imminent nuclear threat from Saddam Hussein. But they wouldn't lie twice. I heard on TV that Iran really does have a nuclear weapons program. You know, this is different. This is the country Bush should have invaded. I mean, I don't know how else an American who lived, even if you weren't paying much attention, I don't know how any American who lived through 2002 and the beginning of 2003 and, hell, the years since then, I don't know how anyone who has lived through this time, any American who's lived through this time, could believe a word that this administration says, particularly when it's about justifying a war. They are liars. Welcome to reality, where the government of the United States is a collection of liars and murderers. Global imperialists. That's just truth. I'm not a left-wing radical. I'm not a right-wing radical either. I guess I am a radical libertarian. But this is not a partisan thing. It's just that our government, all they say is lies. Particularly when it comes to trying to justify aggressive warfare. They don't have any real reasons to bomb Iran that they could, you know, sell to the guys like Bush used to say, the guys down at the pharmacy, you know, sitting at the soda fountain there in Lubbock. There is no real reason that you could give us Hicks in flyover country out here to justify a war with Iran. There aren't any. There are only lies to justify a war with Iran. And somehow, the lies are winning out so far. Somehow, the lies are ahead of the game. And the truth is struggling to keep up. And damn it, that ain't fair. And you know why? Because the truth has been out all this time. There is no evidence. There has been no evidence presented that says that Iran is making nuclear bombs, or that they even have the capability to make a nuclear bomb, or in fact that there is any indication that they have diverted any of their declared nuclear material to the IAEA. And I know what you're saying. Aha, declared loophole. No. They signed an additional protocol to their safeguards agreement with the IAEA that declares everything. They say, oh, well, Iran had a secret nuclear program that we didn't know about for all these years. Yeah, well, they were not required by any of their treaty obligations to come clean about any of that nuclear material. And when they were advanced enough that they were ready to go ahead and introduce uranium hexafluoride gas into their centrifuges in order to begin enriching it, they said, hey, IAEA, we have this nuclear program we've been working on and we're ready to start attempting to enrich uranium. Just like their treaty obligations say. I mean, imagine that. In a world, in a country, I guess nobody else in the world is buying this crap. But in a country where TV, as a basis, as a premise, as the unspoken bottom line of which all Iran conversations spring, is the theory, the so-called fact, the asserted premise, sometimes even unasserted, just the underlying unspoken premise, is that Iran has a nuclear weapons program and a relatively advanced one. Now, how could that be? That is the common perception, not just among the American people, but among the media idiots who repeat these things. When the facts of the case have been open for all to see for years in a row now. It's not in dispute whether the IAEA has carte blanche in Iran. They do. The IAEA, remember Mohammed El-Baradei, the same guy that said that Iraq did not have a nuclear weapons program, or a nuclear program of any kind. It's the same one now saying he can find not only no evidence, but no indication that Iran has diverted any of their nuclear material to any other purpose than peacefully enriching uranium for electricity, to a much lower grade than is required to make a nuclear bomb. As Scott Ritter said on this show, when you hear people say Iran is 10 years away from a nuclear bomb, well, they've been saying that since 2004. Now it's 2007. Well, they're still 10 years away from a nuclear bomb. Well, how's that? Because they haven't started yet. When they start, then, you know, let me know. When Iran announces its intention to withdraw from the Non-Proliferation Treaty, and then when 6 months later they finish withdrawing from the treaty and kick the IAEA inspectors out of their country, let me know and I'll click the button on my stopwatch and we can start counting 10 years from then. Because they are not working on nuclear weapons technology in the presence of the IAEA. And people say, oh, well, it's dual use. They're enriching uranium. Yeah, but they're enriching it to 3.5%. And the ability to enrich uranium to 3.5%, as per my very best understanding from the various scientists I know, such as Dr. Prather, is not the ability to enrich uranium to above 90% pure uranium-235 necessary to make a simple simple atomic fission bomb. It's a whole different ball of wax, going from 3.5% to 90-something percent. And by the way, the Iranians' equipment is a bunch of junk they bought from Pakistani scientist AQ Khan's garage sale. It's a bunch of garbage. First generation, second generation, rusty hunks of junk. So, there you have it. Iran still in perpetual 10 years distance from the ability to make a nuclear bomb. That's the imminent nuclear threat posed by that rogue regime. And you know, here's a lie about Iran that I left off of my list. Damn it. And that is that, well, although I guess we disprove this lie without directly confronting it out loud, but the lie that the Iranians are too crazy to deal with. That, you know, there's some kind of weird end times religion. Never heard anything about that around here, right? There's some weird end times religion. And they put their faith in their silly book way before reality, and since they're insane and crazy and brown and have nukes, they can't be dealt with, they can't be reasoned with, they can't be bargained with. They only understand one thing: force. And that's what we're going to give them. That's the biggest lie of all. America has been working with Iran since the Republicans specifically have been working with Iran since their puppet dictator, the Shah Reza Pahlavi, was overthrown by Ayatollah Khomeini and the students in the street in 1979. The Americans immediately opened relations, at least back channel, with the mullahs. They continued working with Iranian intelligence. I think it's been proven by Gary Sick and others at this point. Robert Perry is another. That the Republicans struck a deal with the Iranians. They called it the October Surprise, to keep American hostages in Iranian custody until the day that Reagan took office. That they made a deal during the campaign: don't let these prisoners out as long as Carter is president, and we'll treat you real good once Reagan is. And they hated Carter, so they went for it and made the deal. And of course, the Reagan administration sold them weapons through, what, two-thirds of the 1980s. The Reagan administration, i.e. Dick Cheney, Eric Edelman, etc., the very same guys in charge now, they were selling weapons to Iran. Oh, through Israel. Israel that Iran supposedly is going to wipe off the map. Israel that is so good and just, it cannot deal with the sick, evil Iranians. Yeah, it was the Israelis who were basically reselling to Iran missiles sold to them at a discount rate in the covert action that was Iran-Contra. Dick Cheney spent the 1990s as CEO of Halliburton lobbying Bill Clinton to lift the sanctions on Iran. Dick Cheney sounded like freaking Ludwig von Mises in the 1990s. Hey, war is bad for business. Government is bad for business. Let us trade cash for oil with the Iranians. They're people too, said Dick Cheney in the 1990s when he did not have state power. That's the crazy Iranians that we just can't deal with because they're so crazy and religious and irrational. We cannot deal with them. We've been dealing with them this whole time. After September 11th, they helped us with the war on terrorism. As Phil Giraldi explained on Charles Goyette's show earlier today, the archive, of course, which will be up on antiwar.com later, they are holding Al-Qaeda guys in prison right now. Hell, we remember just 2 weeks ago, Al-Qaeda in Iraq, Islamic State in Iraq, or whatever, put out a press release threatening war against Iran. They said, Iran, stop backing the American factions in Iraq. Which, of course, you know, to you and me is, America, stop backing the Iran factions in Iraq. Yeah. Same difference, though, to Al-Qaeda, I guess. They said, Iran, if you don't stop meddling in the affairs of Iraq and supporting the groups who support American occupation, we're going to go to war against you, you bastards. Said Al-Qaeda to Tehran a week ago, 2 weeks ago. Although, full disclosure, al-Baghdadi, the guy who put out that statement, yeah, it turns out he doesn't exist. Funny thing that, how many of these terrorists die multiple times or turn out never to have existed in the first place. So I don't know. Maybe that was just a psyop. Although if it was an American lie, it was a really bad timed one, or it was one made to hurt Dick Cheney's efforts to start a war. If it was, in fact, you know, propaganda made up by Americans that Al-Qaeda had threatened war with Iran. Seems pretty counterproductive. Seems like if it was the Americans behind it, the propaganda would be Al-Qaeda offers Iran assistance in the event of war with America. Something to that effect, you know. Since supposedly, according to Eli Lake and the guys at the New York Sun, they're all just the best friends. Al-Qaeda and the mullahs in Tehran. And so, yeah, we talked about the nukes on the show. Juan Cole came on. Juan Cole, he speaks and reads and writes Farsi. Uh-oh. Oh, no. He understands the foreign language, and he doesn't work for the government, and he's going to tell us what he wants to say. Ah, jeez. So here comes Juan Cole this morning on the Charles Goyette Show explaining, Aminajad never said he was going to wipe Israel off the map. As he's written before, Juan Cole, there's no such idiom as to wipe anything off a map in Farsi, the Persian language. It wouldn't have made any sense. What he said was that the Soviet Union used to be really big and strong, and ultimately it crumbled. And so too will the regime in Jerusalem must vanish from the page of time. So did he say, kill all Jews? No, he didn't. What he said was, sooner or later, have faith, my brothers, or whatever, that sooner or later, the Zionist government will no longer occupy Jerusalem. It will vanish from the page of time eventually. In fact, in the rest of the speech, he talked about how that ought to happen by a democratic referendum. Don't tell the Republicans. The Iranians threaten a referendum in Israel. No! No! Let the Palestinians vote for the Knesset. No! Did you hear that? They're going to nuke us. We have to bomb them. They're asking for a referendum. No! Okay. Sorry. I shouldn't try to be funny. It doesn't work. Sometimes I'm funny. Just never on the radio. That's you guys' tough luck, I guess. So, yeah, they don't have nukes, and they did not threaten to wipe Israel off the map. Also, Phil Giraldi came on, debunked the lies that Iran is backing Al-Qaeda, as just discussed, and talked about the nuke option. I said, Phil Giraldi, former CIA guy, why would America use nukes? Under what circumstances would America think, would the policymakers here, think that they needed to use nuclear weapons on Iran? And he said, well, two things. A lot of their nuclear facilities are deep underground, and they think they might have to hit them with nuclear bombs in order to destroy them, even though, of course, those nuclear facilities are not producing nuclear bombs because they can't. But beyond that, a second possible use of nuclear weapons by the United States against Iran would be, as he said, to hold them in our back pocket as a threat. That, listen, Iran, you're going to sit back and let us bomb you for a few weeks until we're done. And if you dare fight back against us, then we'll nuke you. You're going to stand there and let us jump you and kick the crap out of you. But if you fight back, we're going to blow your brains out. going to drop atomic weapons on civilians who happen to live within your borders. Can you imagine the United States of America, your country, the land of the free and the home of the brave and the Declaration of Independence? Our government is going around the world threatening people with nuclear war? Threatening countries that don't even have nuclear weapons, don't even have anything but a third world military? I mean, waging aggressive war in Iraq was pretty bad. There are no plans, as far as I know, to send in ground troops to attempt to, really occupy Iran. It's impossible. They'd have to conscript the whole damn country and send us all over there. But, so apparently what they want is a war from the air with no consequences. And they want to tell the Iranians that if they fight back, we'll nuke them. Says former Central Intelligence Agency counterterrorism operative Philip Giraldi on the radio show in Phoenix this morning, 1100 a.m. Can you imagine your country using nuclear weapons against a country that has never attacked us, that is no legitimate threat even to Israel, who, by the way, have more than 400 atomic bombs? I'm sorry I sound so, like, hyperbolic and melodramatic and what have you, but, hey, that's not okay. That's not okay for our government to be threatening other countries with atomic war when they're not even a threat to our country, when they've never even attacked our country, when they don't have nuke one. Jeez. In the Cold War, they, at least called it deterrence and so forth. The hell do you call this except aggressive war? To think that people are even considering, that it's even a consideration that America would use nuclear bombs. I mean, hey, guess what? If their nuclear facilities that are not a threat to America or even Israel worry you that much, and you just absolutely have to drop bombs on it until it's destroyed, well, man, empty out the inventory, drop in conventional bombs, would you? We don't need fission to fight our wars. Send in some ground troops. It's not the government, particularly the Bush-Cheney Chicken Hawk administration, has proven themselves more than willing to expend American soldiers' lives as though they cost a nickel apiece or worth nothing. Why not go ahead and send in some ground forces, drop off some guys, some paratroopers to go in there with their hand grenades and blow up the nuclear facilities by hand? If it's really that important to you. Instead, literally, the Vice President's office and the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the Air Force, they're talking about using nuclear bombs to get at the Natanz facility. The Bushehr facility, I guess, as well. And meanwhile, the Air Force has said, and this is in print, just Google it, that the military option is not a good option. They don't have any good targets. And in fact, they don't have a list of nuclear targets in Iran that they feel is exclusive. They feel like their nuclear stuff could be moved around very quickly. And then what if they bomb it for 2 weeks and then Iran says, ha ha, we're still enriching uranium. You missed. That there's no exit strategy. That's a bad idea. That's not going to work. To degrade a nuclear program that's still nowhere near the ability to produce a nuclear bomb. It's absolutely unbelievable and unforgivable and unimaginable. I mean, geez. I'd rather talk about things other than preventive nuclear wars against non-nuclear powers. It sounds silly, doesn't it? Sounds like something that couldn't be, and yet I've read The New Yorker, Seymour Hersh, The Next Act, Seymour Hersh, The Iran Plans, Philip Giraldi, I forget the title of it, but from the August 1st, 2005 issue of the American Conservative magazine, from rawstory.com, Larissa Alexandrovna's reporting. The nuclear option is on the table. You heard the Republicans. I played the audio for you on this show of the Republicans. Back then it was 10. Now it's only 9. One of them having had to drop out of the race in humiliation and disgrace. But at the time, 9 out of the 10 Republicans gave the affirmative that they would approve of using nuclear weapons in a war of aggression against Iran. Only Ron Paul stood up against them and, of course, called it the moral crisis of our time. The idea that America goes around, the land of liberty, goes around starting wars with people. It's the most un-American and immoral thing in the world, according to Dr. Ron Paul. But the rest of them, oh, they love it. John McCain, well, we got to leave all options on the table. Nukes, yes, all options on the table. Wolf Blitzer was specific. Rudy Giuliani, nukes, we're talking here. Hey, all options. I see no reason to rule out all options here. Mitt Romney, nukes? Oh, yeah, baby. And, of course, all options on the table. Why, I know you're contradicting me right now. You're sitting out there in Radio Land thinking, well, that's not true, all options on the table. That's not a quote of Mitt Romney or Giuliani or John McCain. That's Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton and John Edwards. Well, as Homer Simpson would say, kids, kids, you're both right. They all are for leaving all options on the table for dealing with Iran's non-threatening nuclear program that is perfectly within the restrictions of the Non-Proliferation Treaty, which they are members of in good standing, and their statutory obligations under their agreements with the International Atomic Energy Agency. Nope, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, John Edwards, they're unanimous. Iran must not be allowed to develop nuclear weapons. All options remain on the table, including the use of nukes. And, you know, Mike Gravel in the first Democratic debate, he brought up the nukes and said, all options on the table, ladies and gentlemen, that means nukes. Isn't that right, Barack? Who do you want to nuke, Barack? And Barack Obama said, I don't want to nuke anybody right now. And then went on to reiterate, all options remain on the table, as did Edwards and Hillary Clinton. With it explicitly stated that all options now means nukes, too. And none of the Democrats would rule that out. Only the heroic Ron Paul stands heads and shoulders above the rest of these thugs. True Founding Fathers material, as Lou Rockwell once wrote, that Ron Paul. And you wonder why he's got my support. The guy, he's the one who opposes a preemptive nuclear war with Iran. That's all. You know, other than that, we disagree on some things, but very few, truthfully. And I'd tell you right now, I'd vote for Kucinich if he was the only one who was opposed to a preemptive nuclear war with Iran. And he is one, by the way. Gravel, Kucinich, both on the Democratic side, have ruled out preemptive war against Iran. The rest of them are for it, and all the Republicans except for Ron Paul. There you go. So anyway, yeah, Bob Dreyfus came on. He talked about how the Iran factions are the American factions in Iraq. And Gareth Porter following up there, yeah, if Iran is supplying anybody in Iraq, it's our allies, the Iranian parties. Not our enemies, so-called, quote-unquote, enemies, the Sunni insurgency against our occupation. And then Justin explained that if you're a conservative, the average Republican conservative out there who supports this policy, why, you're a sucker. You've been duped by a bunch of ex-communist radicals who favor a permanent revolution around the world and an unending state of war. And they are ex-communists, the neoconservatives. They are crazies. Even in their own words, Michael Ledeen. Why are radicals, revolutionaries, called conservatives? Beats me. Ledeen said. So all you guys out there in your pickup trucks who say America's got to go over there and kick ass, don't you remember what happened on 9/11 and all that? You are the dupe of a clique of ex-communists who infiltrated the Republican Party. Ha ha. Suckers. You call me un-American, tell me I'm the one who, you know, is betraying the soldiers, et cetera, et cetera, as you rally around a policy written up by a bunch of ex-Trotskyites. God. The shame. It must be unbearable almost to live with the shame of being an American citizen, regular guy, cheerleader of these sickos in charge of American policy. Incredible. All right. Here, let me play a song for you, and then come back and do some more anti-war radio on Chaos Radio 95.9, 92.7 FM in Austin, Texas. Y'all, it's Anti-War Radio and Chaos Radio 95.9 in Austin, Texas. 92.7 also. Streaming live worldwide on the internet. KAOS959.com. And, yeah, so I'm Scott Horton. This is Anti-War Radio. The phone number here, 512-646-6446. 512-646-6446. Anybody wants to get involved on the show, talk about Iran or whatever else you want. I don't care. Whatever you like. 512-646-6446. And, yeah, so I'm Scott, and I got a chip on my shoulder about this state of mine. Won't they ever just cease to exist? You know? That's what really bothers me. Oh, funny, interesting story there. When I was hosting Charles Goyette's show in Phoenix this morning, one of the top of the hour news breaks talked about the crisis in Phoenix, Arizona. Cops on steroids, as Mike Danger pointed out to me when I saw him not long ago. Cops take steroids a lot. Hey, how come it is that it's okay for cops to take steroids, but if a pro wrestler takes them, you haul them into court, threaten to, you know, put them in jail. You can put them in jail. Steroids are perfectly okay if you're a cop. Apparently. Well, no, actually not. According to the local news in Phoenix, Arizona, it's a real big problem. And they even had a police spokesman say that these cops need to know that this is really bad for them. Oh yeah, and one more thing. Also, it's illegal. So if you're a cop and you're taking illegal steroids, then that makes you a criminal. And according to the spokesman that they had the soundbite from there on KFNX, well, those cops need to know that there will be consequences. They're breaking the law. Yeah, right. Can you imagine cops having to face consequences for breaking the law? Who ever heard of that? That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. Everybody knows cops are allowed to break any law they please. Their job is to protect the state and oppress us. Cops have to obey the law. I guess they have to say that every once in a while on the radio to keep people, you know, caught up in the fiction. But does anybody think there's going to be a real big, serious investigation into steroid-banging cops in the Phoenix Police Department? That anything's going to be done about it? That the grand jury's going to hand down some indictments and the prosecution is going to take these guys and threaten to lock them in cages? Or actually lock them in cages for engaging in this dastardly, illegal drug use. Does anybody think that that's going to happen? I think you're naive. I think you're a fool if you think that. It's obvious. Before the contest is even started. We already know the deal. If you're a cop, it's all right to kill people. The law doesn't apply to you. The law is for the people. You are the law. Sort of like Boss Hogg. When I was a little kid, when I was 7, my cousin actually came into town. And my cousin was like, man, you don't watch the Dukes of Hazzard? Like, the Dukes of Hazzard, what's that? And it came on at 7 o'clock. I was 7, it came on at 7. And we watched the Dukes of Hazzard, and it was the greatest thing. I loved it. And, of course, if you remember Hazzard County, the law isn't some words on paper that were agreed to by free people within their limits, of exercising power, you know, in a way to protect their rights or this or that. No. Who was the law? What was the law in Hazzard County? Boss Hogg was the law. The rule of men is what prevailed in Travis County, and that's what prevails in the United States today. Hey, Shauna.
Hey, Scott.
Thanks for calling in.
This is totally off the subject, but I was reading this article on Lou Rockwell about this Randy Barnett guy.
Uh-huh.
And there was just this phrase that I just want to sound off about. It says, although opposed to nation building generally, these libertarians believe that implementing democratic regimes in the Middle East, as was done in Germany and Japan after World War II. Okay, it's just about time we quit taking credit for democracy in Germany after World War II.
Or Japan, for that matter. Please state your case.
Those people had democratic elections prior to and during World War II. I mean, that's how Hitler got power in the first place in Germany. And we, you know, it wasn't us coming over there and just setting up these wonderful democratic regimes to these countries that had never heard of such a notion. And anyway, they did it themselves.
Yep. And, you know, and although they were on the American dole at the time, transfer of wealth and what have you. But yeah, no, you're right. And the same thing is true really for Japan, which had been a parliamentary democracy for more than a generation before the imperialist regime basically took over the country. And boy, I'm going to get in trouble from some Japan experts about this, but the way I remember it is that the imperialists, the Japanese fascists, basically were a small minority group of Shintoists. And that does, I'm not saying all Shintoists were for it or whatever, I'm just saying that the vast majority of the population of Japan are Buddhists. And this small minority basically took over and created this imperialist, militarist regime at war. And when they were overthrown, the rest of the people, basically they defaulted back to what their system had been only 15 or 20 years before, well, I guess 20 or so years before, which was a parliamentary democracy. So you're right. I mean, in the case of Germany or Japan, it is not the case that a bunch of, you know, farm kids from Iowa came and, you know, handed down Jeffersonian principles and, you know, saved these people or anything like that. I mean, it really didn't work that way at all. And what's really funny, Shauna, is when you look at this goofball, Randy Barnett, and this pro-war libertarian so-called article that he wrote in the Wall Street Journal, the article in question here, the whole thing is based on, like, you know, Iraq might work out. Yeah, we're going to create a democracy there. And you know, idiots like him have yet to be disproven, even though it's July of 2007. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was really it.
All right,
well,
cool.
I just wanted to make that point because I hear it all over the news, people saying, talking about how we gave democracy to Japan and Germany after World War II and then wondering how come it hasn't worked in Iraq.
Yeah, well, we have a lot less self-government here to export at this point, no doubt about that. Thank you very much, my friend. Anybody else wants to get involved on the air, it's 512-646-6446. 512-646-6446. And, you know, it's amazing how many people tell me they listen to this show, but no one ever calls it. What are you going to do? Shauna calls. Thanks, Shauna. Yeah. So there you go. I don't know what to tell you, folks. I forgot what I was talking about before Shauna called, but it doesn't matter anyway. My real beef is this. I'm losing my liberty. That's really why I'm here. You know, I have severe problems with the American government going around the world and murdering people. But let's face it, I'm an individual, and my first priority here is protecting my own freedom. And yet around me, I see the last structures of restraint on our $3 trillion world empire being shed. Congress has completely given their authority over to Bush, and most of that authority over to the presidency. And most of that authority had already been usurped from the states and the people where it belonged in the first place. The Bush-Cheney administration has acted for 6 years straight, and in practice, they have been absolutely and completely above the law in a way that Richard Nixon could only have dreamt of. And somehow we're tolerating this. But the fact of the matter is, the government, just in the last 6 years, never even mind the, you know, vicious, tyrannical police state that Bill Clinton passed on to George Bush as it existed in the 1990s. But just look at what's happened since September 11th. The Patriot Act, the Department of Homeland Security, the Transportation Security Administration, the Military Commissions Act, the John Warner Defense Appropriations Act, which gutted Posse Comitatus, and the Insurrection Act made it much easier for the president to claim military control over this country without the consent of Congress or the governors or the people or anybody else. Just take one look at the Bill of Rights, and there's a million other things, executive orders and who knows what, that I'm not even mentioning off the top of my head. But just look at the Patriot Act, which people say, oh, you know, the Patriot Act isn't that bad. We just need to, you know, revise certain parts of it. That's what the ACLU says. Yeah, we just need to revise the worst parts of the Patriot Act. Well, look, the Patriot Act is illegal. The Patriot Act is blatantly unconstitutional, period. I'm the court. I decide. No, you can't search my house without a warrant from an independent judge. No, you can't. And yet, I'm wrong. I lose. They can, too, search my house without a warrant. You know what they have to do to search my house now? One cop has to ask himself for a warrant. Hey, can I have a warrant? Sure. Might have to ask his boss. Maybe. And then he gets what's called an administrative subpoena. Which means a cop can now give himself a warrant. His former standard of probable cause has now been reduced to, I think it's even a lower threshold than an objective, reasonable belief on the part of the officer, which was the lowest threshold I ever heard of. I think it's even lower than that now. The threshold of evidence as it exists in the mind of the cop granting himself the warrant. To search my house. Put little bugs on my keyboard so they can see everything I type, whether I hit backspace or not. To tap my telephone. To search my bank account. Which is, you know, obviously a hilarious waste of time because there's nothing in my bank account. And there's not much said over my telephone to incriminate me beyond what I record and post in MP3 format for you folks 5 days a week. But still, it's the goddamn principle of the thing. The Bill of Rights is the supreme law of the land in this country, period. That's why it's the Ten Amendments. The Constitution is Article 1 through 7, and then they amended it and said, hang on now, we're adding 10 more rules just to make sure. That means that the Bill of Rights of 1791 is supposed to be absolutely supreme over the government that has its talons and its control over the people of this country. And yet, look at us. Fourth Amendment, gone. Free speech zones? How's that compatible with peaceably ascending to protest your government for a redress of grievances? To petition them. Which, of course, used to mean sue them. It used to mean you can sue your government for a redress of grievances in the most serious of ways. No, that's no longer true. They all have sovereign immunity from any sort of responsibility now. Never mind that. But now you can't even peaceably assemble anywhere near where the people you're protesting can hear you. At least when it comes to protesting against the federal government or candidates for office in the federal government. We're subsidizing the worst of the Pat Robertson type of brainwashed, imbecile red state fascists and their churches through all the faith-based initiatives. There's another violation of the First Amendment. I can't say so much they violated the freedom of the press, although they sure would like to. They've definitely manipulated and used a lot of propaganda to undermine the First Amendment and what it stands for, you know, our ability to check their power with the truth. But I guess, you know, all's fair in love and war and so forth like that. But let's see. They violate the Second Amendment and prosecute people for gun crimes every day of the week in this country. The federal government does. So there's your Second Amendment out the window. I'll tell you what, if I was the president, anyone who's in jail, convicted of a gun charge that does not accompany an assault or battery or robbery or violation of someone else's liberty would be pardoned in an instant. To think for a minute that we tolerate people being locked up for the mere possession of a firearm that the government doesn't approve. What the hell is this, Russia? Give me a break. Now, the Third Amendment says that they can't force you to quarter soldiers in your house. Well, they can just take the money right out of your paycheck before you even get it and spend that money on a barracks right down the street. And of course, it's foreigners mostly who have to worry about American soldiers quartering themselves in their houses. Not us these days, although, you know, clock's ticking. Fourth Amendment, as I already said, completely eviscerated. The military now, National Security Agency, tapping your phone, keeping a record of everyone you call and when and for how long, reading your emails, not just the subject line, as it said in a propaganda piece or two a few years back, but saving it all. And if they feel like messing with you, they got your whole life and every Google search and everything in your bank account and everywhere you went with your cell phone and whatever to go back and keep track of your ass. The government has access to all of it without the authority of an independent judge saying, yes, you have satisfied my standard that you do indeed have probable cause to believe that a violation of the law is being committed, and therefore I will grant you this power to raid this man's castle, search his papers and effects and phone calls, etc. Now, without going into anarcho-criminal justice and everything here, the basic system in the Anglo-American legal tradition, going back to the Magna Carta, even, has us in a better position than that. And yet here we are abandoning it. And of course the American system of law, or at least the premise for the American system of law, was always far superior to the English system, wherein the king was granting his subjects these and those freedoms. But it was still, the idea was he was divine, or had the divine right to rule and was, you know, granting whatever freedom you had to you out of the goodness of his heart. Whereas in the United States, the entire premise is that, no, we all have the divine right, just as much as the King of England. All of us do. Life, liberty, pursuing our happiness our own way, ownership of the property that we justly acquire, etc. And we allow this government to exist to protect these rights that we are born with because we're human beings. And this Bill of Rights is not a Bill of Rights, a list of rights to us. Really, it should be called the Bill of Restrictions, declaratory and restrictive clauses meant to prevent misconstruction or abuse of its powers by the national government, as it says in the preamble to the Bill of Rights. That's the way it's supposed to be. And yeah, Fifth Amendment, how do you like this? These guys in Virginia, the paintball terrorists, oh, well, they're Arab and they're playing paintball in the woods. Clearly, they're training for jihad. They're going to kill women and children, obviously, or why else would they be playing paintball at a business that presumably turns a profit, allowing people to play paintball on their property? But there's no other reason that anyone would do that if they're Arabs, other than planning on killing people. And furthermore, you're going to plead guilty, Mr. Arab dude, who we accuse of being a terrorist. And if you don't plead guilty, we will turn you over to Donald Rumsfeld. We will call you an enemy combatant. And we'll have Don Rumsfeld and the Navy torture you. So how about that guilty plea, huh? How do you like that for a plea bargain? Prosecutor comes down and says, well, I have an offer for you. You can plead this case out. Oh, whew. Boy, is that a burden lifted off my shoulders. I didn't know what you people were going to do with me. Man, boy, I'm relieved. Okay, so what do I got to do? Well, plead guilty, and we won't turn you over to the Navy to be tortured. Amazing how all those Virginia paintball terrorists admitted it. Admitted it. Like this was Soviet Russia and a Stalinist show trial. They admitted that they were terrorists. Even though now we know. They admitted it. The government admitted it. That they threatened these guys with enemy combatant status, which is, of course, no law. Made up, black hole, you're dead. If they did not cooperate and admit to conspiring to wage jihad against us all. So there's your Fifth Amendment, the entire thing, all eight clauses of it or whatever, in the garbage. See, that's the end of the Fifth Amendment there, when they can turn an American over to the military to be tortured. And the Sixth Amendment, of course, goes along right with that. The Seventh Amendment, I think, is the one concerning civil lawsuits and so forth. And I'm certain that the Bush administration is violating it and the right to contract in ways that I cannot estimate. And surely the Seventh Amendment is in the burning scrap heap with the rest of them. The Eighth Amendment, of course, cruel and unusual punishment. Anybody want to argue with me about that? Self-incrimination. Yeah, we're just going to dunk you underwater until you admit whatever it is we tell you to admit. We're just going to freeze you and hang you upside down and sick dogs on you, beat the living shit out of you, and then freeze you again and then sick dogs on you again. Yeah, there's your Eighth Amendment. Oh, no, they only do that to foreigners, though, so it's okay. Yeah, it's all right to do that to people on the other side of water, because if you live on the other side of water, all those natural rights disappear. Now you're just a piece of flesh like a damn dog, and you don't have rights anymore, right? Isn't that the way it works? Jose Padilla is an American citizen arrested unarmed on American soil by civilian police agencies, the FBI. He was turned over to the military and tortured. He's on trial now, and if the jury can think straight at all, he's going to walk, probably only to be re-abducted by the military and sent back to his torture dungeon, which, you know, may happen to him whether he's acquitted or convicted. You know, I guess Padilla's probably best hope is to go ahead and be convicted and hope that the Defense Department will be happy just letting him rot in a regular federal prison rather than re-abducting him and saying, see, we told you he was an enemy combatant, and taking him back to the brig to be tortured some more. There's your Eighth Amendment. An American citizen arrested on American soil by domestic police. Arrested on a material witness warrant because they had nothing on him. Was then turned over to the Navy and tortured. The only reason he's getting a civilian trial right now at all is because the case was going to the U.S. Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court was going to rule, hey, you can't do that unless Congress says so first. And so they preempted that by taking away his standing in court by going ahead and indicting him and moving him to a civilian trial in federal court. But of course, the Supreme Court in a later case ruled, hey, you can't do that unless Congress says it's okay first. In other words, George Bush, you're a felon on hundreds and hundreds of counts of kidnapping and torturing and murdering people. You cannot kidnap and torture and murder people unless Congress says it's okay first. Then you can kidnap and torture and murder people. And so that's what they did. The U.S. Congress, with the John McCain seal of approval, passed the Military Commissions Act and legalized exactly what they did to Jose Padilla. And in fact, in the law, they legalized it retroactively. So anybody you tortured going back to 1997, you're cool. Nice little touch there in the Military Commissions Act. Oh, no, it says, you cannot torture. Oh, by the way, torture is to be defined by the president. That's what it says, the Military Commissions Act. It says that they can do this to you. And then now, so the Ninth Amendment, what does the Ninth Amendment say? Anybody? Can't hear you. It reminds you that this is a list of declaratory and restrictive clauses. That's what it does. It says something to the effect of the enumeration of certain rights in this Constitution shall in no way be construed to deny or disparage others, that is, other rights retained by the people. Rights belong to humans because they're humans. And just because we came up with a list of restrictions against government power to protect a certain number of rights that we have listed here to be protected from them, does not mean in any sense that this is the limit of human liberty. It is for us to define what human liberty is, not the government. And no, human liberty doesn't mean your right to steal from your neighbors or your right to live in a state where your government is so powerful that it has full access to all of your neighbors' wealth so that they can give it to you. That's not what rights are. Rights are not your right to violate somebody else. It's your right to not be violated. And the Ninth Amendment says, just because there's a list of rights here doesn't mean this is the list of rights. And, you know, remember that every time you hear right-wingers complaining that the right to privacy isn't in the Constitution. So what's the Supreme Court talking about? Doesn't matter if it's in the Constitution or not. Of course we all have the right to privacy. If the word isn't in the Fourth Amendment, so what? Does anybody misunderstand the meaning of the Fourth Amendment? You can't send the government to go around breaking in people's houses, going through their stuff, unless you have probable cause to believe, as agreed to by an independent judge, that they are committing a crime against somebody else? What's that if it's not explicitly laying out the right to privacy without using the very word? Anyway, that's the purpose of the Ninth Amendment, to remind later generations. Free people created this Bill of Rights to restrict government power. This was not a gift of freedom from the government to the people. This was a gift of power to the government from the people, with limits, strict limits, such as, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, drum roll, do the thing, if you can do drum rolls, like with your mouth or whatever, I can't do it, but do yourself a drum roll. The Tenth Amendment, which says that any power that is not expressly delegated to the national government by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states and to the people. There are restrictions in the Constitution on the states, such as no state shall be allowed to print paper money. Okay, so the states do not retain that right. In fact, in the Constitution, no government has the right to print paper money. But never mind that. The point is, the states gave up some of their powers to the new national government, explicitly in writing. And they also formulated a way for people to change the Constitution. It's called an amendment. You get two-thirds of both houses of Congress and three-fourths of the states in the Union, their legislatures, to ratify it, and you change the Constitution. Instead, what we do now is we just pretend that the Tenth Amendment never existed at all. We pretend that the Constitution doesn't say anything except there shall be a Congress and a President and a Court, and they can do whatever the hell they want. Which, of course, it doesn't say anywhere in the Constitution, no matter how bad they try to twist it. And, you know, the sick, evil, neoconservative imperialists love to co-opt limited government language and talk about the poor Constitution in exile. The Constitution's in exile. As long as the liberals call it a living Constitution and ignore its words, it's a Constitution in exile and we need to bring it back. Well, of course, they're exactly right. A living Constitution, that means it's dead. It means it no longer says what it says. It means it now says whatever Al Gore wants you to believe it says. Or worse. Of course, they're right about that. But what do they know of the Constitution except one little clause that says, without a period at the end, there's a dot, dot, dot here, the President shall be the Commander-in-Chief of the Army and the Navy of the United States. Now, the dot, 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 then it says, what do they call that? The ellipses or whatever? There's so many things called an ellipse, something or other. That doesn't ever sound right to me. The three dots, you know, like there's more after this. Or something left out, you know, that kind of thing. It's when called into the actual service of the United States by the Congress. That is when the President is the Commander-in-Chief of the Army and the Navy. He's not the Commander-in-Chief of you and me. He's not the Commander-in-Chief of our country. He's the Commander-in-Chief of the military forces created by and paid for by the United States Congress. When called into actual service. And what these so-called limited government advocates on the right at the Federalist Society advocate is this unitary executive theory where, wonderfully convenient for them, I suppose, as long as we're in a state of permanent, undefined, unwinnable, endless warfare, the President has ultimate and total and supreme power. And they claim to find this in the Constitution of the United States, where it exists nowhere. And in fact, as you all well know, the Congress of the United States has not declared war since 1941. So what the heck are they talking about? They don't want to admit it's a war when it comes to their prisoners being prisoners of war and being treated according to America's signature to the Geneva Conventions. Oh, no, it's not a war. It's a conflict. It's a police action. It's a struggle against violent extremism. It's anything but a war when the rules of war might restrict their power. But the rest of the time, oh, it's war, all right. George Bush came out and said, I don't care what Donald Rumsfeld says about a global struggle against violent extremism. This is a dang war, man. I'm a war president. Which, you know, he does the fake Texas accent better than I do, and I'm from here. He's from Connecticut. The hell does that tell you? I'm a war president. We're at war, and that means ultimate power resides in the president's office. And obviously, functionally, nowadays, in the office of the vice president of the United States. And it just goes on and on and on. This U.S. attorney scandal, which I tried to not pay too much attention to, because what the hell do I care? It doesn't have anything to do with our endless slaughtering of Arabs overseas, does it? Okay, we got to get our eye back on the ball. But no, it turns out it's really important. These U.S. attorneys were fired because they refused to set up and wrongfully prosecute Democrats for vote crimes, for voter fraud, and so forth. Karl Rove was trying to set these U.S. attorneys up to maliciously prosecute their political opponents, to keep them out of power. And the ones who got fired were the ones who refused to go along, which I don't know, I'm not saying all the rest of them who stayed on did or whatever, but at least in these cases, that's why they got canned. And the U.S. Congress has called Harriet Myers, Bush's former lawyer, and apparently surrogate mother, remember the lady tried to put on the Supreme Court, his own personal lawyer. I can just imagine that conversation. Yeah, you've been real loyal to me. I know, I'll put you on the Supreme Court. No one can stop me, I'm the unitary executive. Remember her? Well, Congress asked her to come and testify. And she said, no, the president has invoked executive privilege and says that you can't know about what I said to him ever, etc. Well, so Congress, as according to the so-called law, called up the Justice Department and said, all right, Justice Department, do like it says in the statute and investigate, convene a grand jury, and let's get some prosecutions going for contempt of Congress. And the Bush administration responded, oh, no, you can't, because I'm the unitary executive, and I'm the boss of the Justice Department. And the Justice Department, I refuse to grant them the authority, as though the authority comes from him and not the Congress and the law. I refuse to grant them the authority to pursue a case of contempt of Congress in a case where I am asserting executive privilege. Another tremendous step outside of the law in this country. And, you know, I don't know why anybody should care any more than I do or any less or whatever, but it seems to me like if I'm going to live to be 75 and, like, have a rocking chair and hopefully, like, a little place, buy some water somewhere and, like, you know, chill out in the yard and smoke my pipe, et cetera, like that, how the hell is all that going to happen if I live in a fascist totalitarian police state in permanent war? I'm not going to be able to do that, grow old and be free. Have kiddos and have them be free. And that's what I want. That's why I'm here. Self-interest. I want my goddamned freedom. Belongs to me. Our government is out of control. If you can't measure it by Patriot Act enforcement and false terrorism prosecutions and unending war, measure it in dollars, my friends. $3 trillion a year. You know, Bill Clinton had the first $1 trillion budget in like 97, 98. And I remember saying, my God, $1 trillion a year worth of government. Oh, my God. I can't believe it. What will become of us? And now look at us. $3 trillion. $3 trillion. We'd probably buy all the property in Asia with that. We can't afford it. Our system is going to come crumbling down like the Soviet system did if we keep this up. And we're going to lose our freedom, too. So, anyway, I guess the bottom line, short, easy, quick solution, answer, oppose empire. It's what a real patriot should do. Should oppose his government when it's trying to drive his society over a cliff and destroy it. Oppose state power. When you catch yourself asking them to do something, when you catch yourself complaining that government should have done this and that better and didn't, and you wish they would do better next time, when you find yourself saying, there ought to be a law to enforce whatever your newest opinion is, why don't you take a deep breath and ask if that's really in your best interest to live in a totalitarian future? My calculation, best I can figure out, nothing genius about it, just the best I can do, I figure oppose them in their every activity. Turns out all they do is lie and murder and steal stuff all the time anyway, so it's not like you have to talk bad about actual good things in government. There are none. And that's all we have to do as a society, I think, is just stop asking the government to do things for us. They're liars and murderers. They're good for nothing, and they are the biggest enemy of life and liberty in the world. And very much including the land here between Canada and Mexico. It is our government, particularly on the national level, that is the greatest threat to our society, our lives, and our freedom. So, get your shit together, would you, people? Come on. Hate the state. Feels great. Ain't too bad. Give it a run around the block, see how it feels. Yeah, hate the state. They are liars and murderers, huh? Yeah. Okay, good. Thanks, folks. Thanks much, folks, for listening. I will have this posted up on the Stress blog later on today, and also hopefully be able to find some time to get editing on these interviews from the Goyette Show this morning. Got 6 good ones to post up there on antiwar.com and on Stress and so forth. So anyway, that's it for the show. I'll play a song for you now, and see you back here tomorrow. Going to be talking with Greg Palast and hopefully Jacob Hornberger as well. We'll see. But yeah, this is Antiwar Radio on Chaos Radio 95.9 in Austin, Texas. And here's wait a minute. Yeah, I got that set. All right, Chaos Radio 95.9 ST.